As soon as His Majesty had left, we got under way and anchored all the flotillas outside Inchkeith. We were to meet the enemy fleet roughly halfway across the North Sea. When the CNC had given me my first verbal orders, I asked him what he wished me to do should there be a fog when we met. The idea of two big fleets meeting on opposite courses in a thick fog, with the intent that one should take charge of the other, did seem a serious proposition, and in November there was a fog most days. Sir David took a turn up and down his cabin and said, "There won't be a fog." The only satisfactory answer, and there wasn't. It would be quite easy for two fleets, one starting from Rosyth and the other from Kiel, to pass each other in the North Sea without either sighting the other. The flotillas were therefore spread out on a broad front, some 5 miles apart, with the caster in the centre. It may be imagined that our feelings that night were a curious mixture. What we were going out to do was hardly believable. And if there had been speculations as to how the end of the war at sea would come about, this particular end would have been guessed by no single person. Some held it was a trick. Needless to say, we were all ready. The first indication that there was someone afloat in the North Sea, somewhere ahead, came from a flash on the distant horizon, a flash as from a big explosion. Never, as far as I know, authentically explained, although I have heard it said it was a destroyer which blew herself up rather than surrender. Certainly they arrived one short of the stipulated number. Another was sent over some days later to complete the number. After the flash, we saw nothing more for an hour or so. At about 6:30 we sighted, rather broad on the starboard bow, the lights of a fleet, and I made the general signal, perhaps the last time it has been made, "Enemy in sight," bearing so-and-so and giving our position. The Cardiff, flying the flag of Rear Admiral Alexander Sinclair, detailed to lead the main fleet up to their anchorage, was approximately 20 miles astern of us, and the whole fleet was able to check their positions and adjust the course as necessary to meet the Germans exactly. As the great hulls of the enemy ships, approaching in a long line, could be made out, the whole thing seemed more and more unreal and impossible. It was still dark, but a hint of twilight about, as in the caster we passed down the line, a ghostly line with few lights showing or signs of life. First the battleships, then the cruisers, and so on to the destroyers coming up astern. As we approached the latter, I turned 16 points with 4 leaders already detailed, each flying a large blue ensign. These were to lead each of the 4 German lines. Our flotillas were formed on each flank with the 13th across the rear. Thus we returned to harbour, 170 destroyers, in company of which the 49 in the centre were German. A certain amount of adjustment was necessary to the course, to clear May Island and to get on the line of bearing for anchoring. All this was done by commercial code. The Germans were not one whit behind our own in answering or executing signals. The whole of the flotillas were anchored together by one general signal, "Anchor instantly," a signal so familiar to every naval officer, one can wonder if anyone will ever again see it applied to so many ships in company. Having anchored the flotillas, I steamed down the lines and closed the Champion. Captain Dutton, who I was leaving in charge for the night, while I went up to harbour to report on board the Queen Elizabeth and complete the arrangements for taking the destroyers to Scapa, where they were to go the following morning. Completing my business, I returned to my usual boy with orders for steam at daylight. Daylight came, and with it a thick fog. so thick that the arches of the bridge as we passed under it were scarcely visible. We crept down the lines of battleships and battlecruisers, unable to see them, but hearing people talking on board them, and so were able to verify our position by hailing, "What ship is that, and in what berth?" All the berths being numbered on the chart. We still had to negotiate the gate. Our first indication of our proximity to it was an agonized voice from the fog, "For God's sake, go astern!" At the same moment, I made out the gate trawler. On each side of the gate, a trawler was moored, fitted with special winches to lower or raise a net hung between them. It was too late to go astern, but we cleared her by a few feet by going ahead and swinging the stern with the helm hard over. A close thing. Navigation was now clear, and we were lucky enough to get a glimpse of the top of Inchkeith, and so to our berth, knowing we were 2 cables from the nearest line, but without seeing them. By wireless, I could get the destroyers, our own, who were to accompany me to Scapa as escort. But German wireless was forbidden, and the instruments had been removed. It was necessary to send an officer to tell each one that as I passed in the castor, they were to weigh and follow me. They carried out their orders admirably. Passing beyond May Island, as so often happened, it became suddenly clear, and as ship after ship emerged from the fog, the enemy were all accounted for, but not a single British destroyer in sight. There we were at sea with the whole of our prisoners and no warders. They soon emerged. Owing to the congestion in the air, it had proved quicker to send a message by boat than by wireless. Arrived in Guttersound, we berthed them at buoys so long occupied by British destroyers. Their boats were removed and hauled up on the beach. Later they were allowed to have the boats back, which was no doubt a convenience to them when it came to the sinking business. I saw, of course, a good deal of the German destroyers at this time and inspected several. There is no doubt the officers felt their position keenly. The Commodore asked me not to let his men associate with men from the big ships, for he said, "We still have discipline here and no Soviets." In the big ships, the men had complete charge, the officers being merely permitted to navigate the ships as ordered. A few days in Scapa, and I left for the last time.